This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's Mike Shope.
Hey. Put a little... I never get this line out the first time. It's not even good. Hey. Put a little bit more in there, cowboy.
And the Bulldog.
What's your degree in?
Kicking ass and taking names.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
A quick thought on Amari Cooper in the continuing saga of whether the Bills should go get a wide receiver from somewhere. His name is one of the more prominent names for this. So they converted all his money into bonuses, which might have been a flag that they are ready to trade him, make it easier for other teams. Are they really going to tank, though? Like, are they a team that, if they lose to Philadelphia and it's bad, like it's been, they go to 1-5. With Watson there, and apparently they're obligated to play him, would they really make a move like that? Or were they just are they just going to try to squeeze the very most they can out of a season and end up winning like six games or something like that.
I know what they should do, but that's not the question here. It's what will they do, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to really predict what a team that gave that dude $236 million and guaranteed every single dime of it is going to do. But they should try to get whatever they can get, especially I think he should cost more because of the money. Although they've already done that. So, you know, it's one thing if you're talking to a team and you go, we want you to keep, you know, half or three quarters of this money that he's owed because we don't have the cap room, then the team with the player can go, okay, well then your fourth has to become a second or something. But it's already done. So there are, you know, it's like they don't really have a bargaining chip there, but the player should have more value because the cap ramifications are so minimal.
Maybe. It sounds like he's miserable, Cooper. I mean, what, that would make sense.
Sure.
Someone who is not miserable is Dennis Williams, who joins us now on the West Her Hotline. That's safe to say, is it not, Dennis?
Yeah, no, everything's good. We survived down here on the right coast of Florida, so we were out of the storm path, which was good for us here in Florida. But some of the people, man, it was brutal.
And that's not always the case, right? Like on the East Coast, you can get hit.
Yeah, you can, but it's interesting. I moved here 3.5 years ago, and I feel like the folks on the Gulf Coast side are boarding up their houses 3 or 4 times a year. And we haven't. I mean, I haven't had to do anything, no evacuations, no real threats here, knock on wood, since I've been here. So I don't know what it is. They say it's the warm Gulf water and it all gets sucked in there or whatever. But, yeah, fortunate that this side of the state has been a little safer. That doesn't mean I'm asking more people to move here, because there's enough people down here for sure.
We've known Dennis a long time. He was with WGR for a period of time, Channel 4 before that, Empire. Yep. And we're glad to have you.
Yeah. Dennis, it's been a long time here. I was really excited when I heard about this. And I want to tell you a part of the reason why is that I don't know if this happens for you back when, you know, with your broadcasting career. Maybe it's different because you're out of it now. But like Mike and myself, for instance, you know, we've done lots of shows. We used to do a lot more shows out on remotes. And every now and then, like some memory will come up where he'll say something to me about, you know, a topic or an issue, this Bills game from this year, and I'll remember we were in the foyer of Premier Liquor or something, right? I can remember a conversation and where we were having it. And even though you and I only did, I don't know, a handful of shows together, I remember a remote with you where we drove out to the country to do it was like a lawn and garden type place, like big, you know, leaf blowers, riding mowers, that kind of stuff. And they had, at the time, they had started selling these three-wheeled Can-Am Spyder motorcycles. And I test drove one, not with you, but by myself. But I remember sitting in the showroom of this place talking about, I'm conflicted because I really like Marty Baron, but I hate the Flyers. And he's making me want to root for the Flyers. And like I remember sitting with you doing that show.
That's great. And I actually have a very vivid memory of filling in for Mike. I think that's what used to happen. I was doing sales and filling in, and I would fill in occasionally for each of you. But I remember an extended period of time when I filled in for Mike, and you provided one of my most embarrassing moments in the history of my broadcast career. When you and Greg fooled me that you could tell by the taste every color of M&M. You remember that?
Yes, I do. Yes.
And he had some symbol he would give you from behind the glass for each color.
Right.
And you would be able to guess which color. And I was literally blown away. I was like, what are you guys doing?
Wow.
And I was like, I was literally the most embarrassed. You, like, purposely, the guest guy, the guest host.
Right.
Embarrassed the absolute, you know what, out of me. But it was funny. It was
funny. We worked, I think we worked on that for, I think I said it one day, like, convinced you, like, no, I can do it. We'll have to get some M&Ms tomorrow or something, and we'll do it. And then Greg and I came up with this plan to hoodwink you. Yes, I forgot about that, but that's right.
Did they at least tell you before the segment was over? That it was a trick?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, they let me off the hook.
Okay. You didn't find out, like, years later.
No.
Yeah, Dennis hasn't been telling family and friends for years, I used to work with this guy in Buffalo that could tell the M&M flavors.
Yes. Yeah, the red ones are a little bit more tart, I think. Well, Dennis, let's let everybody know what you're up to now. I got reacquainted with you and Josh Mora through your podcast called The Back Nine. How's it going, and what are some of the topics you guys hit on?
Boy, the Back Nine podcast has been really fun. It's like Josh and I, who both got out of the business around the same time, 2009 and 2010. And we've been just talking about the Back Nine of life. So it's not a golf podcast. And we've just had a great time, you know, talking about everything that everybody encounters in the second half of their life, whether it's health and wellness topics, mental health, just fun things that you do, travel, all those kinds of things. It's so interesting to me because we have these people that might not talk about that kind of stuff, like you, Mike, like things that you get to talk about that you don't get to talk about necessarily all the time on your show. And, you know, so many stories. I'll just give you a quick one. Like Brad Faxon came on, right? And and everybody knows him as a golfer or a PGA player and commentator. And he was so grateful that he got to talk about his four daughters being a girl dad. And that's kind of the stuff that we get into, that kind of stuff with taking on topics that you wouldn't expect these people to talk about. And from a Buffalo perspective, we've had great guests. I mean, we've had you, we've had Ruben Brown, we've Carol Jason Negrelli, Jody Jackson, old names, you know, Kevin O'Neill. So we've had a lot of shows. We drop a show every Tuesday. So we're almost a year in. So by December, we'll have dropped 52 episodes. So we're pretty proud of it. It's you know, it was interesting because we were rusty. I listened to the first season and it was like, I need some reps here. And then we kind of hit our stride it's become a lot better show. And thankfully you were a little later, Mike. So I think we had a really good show with you last season. So yeah, it's been fun. It's really fun. And then meantime, my main job is I own my own marketing consulting firm now. And we do all kinds of stuff, media buying, TV commercials, documentaries, anything you can think of in the marketing space, we do, and it's called Three Bridges Consulting, and I've been doing that for about 5 years.
Very good. Yeah. You know, you're out of the business, but I'm guessing, I'm pretty sure you're still paying attention to major sports, and maybe in particular the Buffalo teams. It's different in some ways, I would say, than 15 years ago. Obviously, the Bills have found Josh Allen, and that has just launched them into like the elite tier in the league over the last 5-6 years. The Sabres are kind of still the Sabres, Dennis. Like it's comparable to the Bills drought, where you just wonder if they'll ever get it right. On Allen, do you have any perspective, not just him, but sort of the Bills after all those losing seasons, you know, getting to where they've gotten? It's one thing that's obviously this is going to happen. Change now, or the situation now is like, okay, why can't they win in the playoffs though? Like for all those years of not making it, the standard has changed, and the question people ask about them is whether there's some flaw that they have that holds them back from winning more. I think maybe that flaw is called Patrick Mahomes, but
yeah, I think that too. I mean, I struggle with McDermott. I know that for me, I go. When you're in those situations, right, is it Mahomes or is it Andy Reid? Because I think if you have the best coach and quarterback combination, you're going to win most of your playoff games. And I just feel that the Bills have a deficit there, maybe not a quarterback, but a head coach. And I don't mean that in terms of, like, you know, until Sunday. I think he's a really good coach during the week. I think after 8 years, when you hear somebody say, like he did last week, that we're learning, I struggle with that. I mean, I don't know that you should still be learning about game time situations when it's crunch time. And I'm not saying the game, they're 1-6 in overtime. So I'm not saying if they cut with him. So I'm not saying overtime would have been a great, you know, thing for them to get to. But at the end of the day, I do struggle with him and whether he can get them over the hump. That's kind of where I am now with the Bills.
Yeah, and you know that is pressed up against his record and this life that we're living now, which is largely, like Mike already said, they can't get past KC, they can't win in the playoffs, at least a second game. They've won a game in the playoffs each of the last 4 years, I think, or if not five even. Anyway, so, you know, every day maybe someone will get in and want to sort of pick at him. And I'm not here to say that it's all wrong necessarily, but the sense that I get here, Dennis, is that ownership, like he'd have to have two terrible seasons, I think, before anything would even happen. You know, like even if this season unraveled to like a 7-10 or something, not that I'm predicting that, I don't even think the seat would get warm.
Well, I agree with you, and I think this season. I mean, we don't want to hear this, but I think this season's like a bonus. I really think with what they did with Diggs and all that dead cap space that they there's and all the moves they made kind of with the cap this year, that they really you're never rebuilding with Josh Allen, but you're a little bit treading water. That's why I don't think they're going to go out and get one of these receivers. I think we'd all love it, but I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think they want to put themselves in a situation, particularly with Davante Adams, where he's demanding the ball like Diggs does. You know, he's that kind of player a little bit. Maybe he wouldn't in a rental situation, but I just don't think. I mean, they got themselves out of that situation, so I don't see it happening. So I'm with you. I don't think there's any threat of McDermott being let go. I think they're going to ride or die with him, and it's really going to be up to Josh and what he can do, because he's really kept him employed, for that matter. I mean, when you think about the mistakes and how many games he's won single-handedly, he has kept him employed.
With Dennis Williams, longtime Buffalo sports media personality, Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, Dennis's podcast is called The Back Nine with Josh Mora. Hey, Dennis, how about the fact like that the Bills and the NFL, but just the Bills within that, have thrived so much so in these years, not just on the field? I mean, maybe you would have predicted that in 2026 there would be a new stadium here, and that the Bills would have had so much success and just, you know, grown much wealthier franchise, all of it. I think in 2009 I would have absolutely not predicted that.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it's a testament to the fan base. The fact that the fans stood by this team during some really dark times over that period since, you know, between 2009, say, and 16, and all those coaching changes and all the misery that everybody went through. I think the fan base deserves a lot of credit for that, and you know, just the serendipity of getting somebody like Josh Allen. I don't think there's any question that you get a not only just a player, but a person like that that fits the market, fits the town, fits the identity of the city, and embraces it like the way he does. You know, it's like winning the lottery. You know, regardless of what happens, frankly, Bills fans are going to look back at this, and it's just going to be, you know, a glorious time regardless, because of what he has been able to do to lift this franchise up. And I say him because he has really masked mistakes and things that they have not done necessarily perfectly in the last 7 years. So hopefully it continues, and hopefully they can take that next step, because the city certainly deserves it.
And as far as the hockey team goes, Dennis, I mean, we're three games in, and we had kind of game to start, terrible game in the second game. Yesterday, the spot on the board we're occupying now is, man, they deserve better. I liked them. If they play that way, they'll win a lot of games, but they still lost. That's our life right now with the Sabres.
Yeah, I don't know how you do it. I mean, I think I'm right about this. They haven't made the playoffs since I lived there in 2010, right? I moved in 11. They haven't made the playoffs
10-11 is the last time.
Right.
Yeah, so they haven't made the playoffs since I moved, so maybe I should move back.
Yeah, now we know why. we just figured out why.
No, it's funny too, because some of my greatest memories are not Bill's memories as a broadcaster in that town. It's the Drury and Briere days and the epic time that happened with those defensemen getting hurt in 06 and them being that was the team that should have won a cup. So I don't know how you guys do it. I do love the fact that Lindy's back. I was in favor of that. I think it's, you know, there's not a lot of choices out there for coaches that could lift this franchise back up, and I think he can do that. I think the issue you have is from there, the team needs to get their Josh Allen, because nobody's going to want to play here again unless they somehow draft an elite superstar that can, you know, transcend Buffalo and become, you know, a league icon. Because right now, it seems like from an outsider that, they're not even sort of like the Bills used to be, that they're not even a player in free agency, that nobody even wants to talk to them. And that's a real problem, you know, because you're not going to go out and get a Drury and Briere to kind of take the franchise to the next level, no matter how good your young core is. So that's what I think they're going to struggle with for a while, and even this year. And we'll see. You know, I'm always hopeful, but I don't know if they have the roster construction right now to be anything maybe than just squeaking into the playoffs because Lindy's there. But we'll see.
They have had their chances in the draft with top two picks, you know, over and over, but not there yet. Well, Dennis, I'm glad we could chat today. I enjoyed doing your podcast, and I also told Josh that. He and I met when he was up a few weeks ago. So continued success to you, and thanks for your time.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me on. And Bulldog, we'll get you on soon, too. We'd love to have you on as a guest as well. So thanks, guys. It's been great to talk to you.
Sure, all right. I'd be happy to do it anytime, Dennis.
Thanks, Dennis.
All right. Thank you.
The podcast is called The Back Nine with Dennis Williams and Josh Mora. I guess he's probably right, isn't he, about the Sabres, that there still needs to be somebody from the sky that drops into the organization that makes them cool and makes them attractive and lifts them up and they're great. Because how else do you get there?
I guess. I mean, they've got two number one overall defensemen.
Who
are both really good. And even, I thought last night, even were a key reason why the team had such a good night. So, I mean, that's a pretty great place to start. You know, I mean, how many teams have got two number one overall picks on their blue line out of six guys? Probably not many.
No, ever.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what you thought, but the two late penalties, I thought, were both deserved. Even the Zucker one.
I didn't think the Zucker one was deserved, but, I mean, it happens. The Samuelson one was just, I mean, what do you think the outcome of that is going to be?
You're already shorthanded, too.
Right.
That's what you're probably, his instinct might be, the player's instinct might be, late in the game, already shorthanded.
They're not
going to
call
more.
Another one? Yeah, I don't know.
When the stick breaks, you're in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you get away with that if the stick doesn't break, but you shouldn't. You know, I mean,
I guess the Zucker play happens, but how about just play the puck? It's your puck,
yeah,
against the wall, and instead he stops and then just leans back into the Kings guy and draws that. I mean, what, 3 minutes left? How about just sort of win the battle, though?
Well, I think that's an effort to win the battle.
It's an effort to win the battle, but it's like less of an honest effort.
I don't know. Get yourself some room. I didn't have any problem with Zucker making that play myself. I wouldn't criticize him. It's a terrible call, in my opinion.
It is?
Yeah, I think it's a terrible call. He didn't even hit him in the head. The guy dove. The guy acted like what I thought happened. There was a hit in a preseason game where Canadian's tough guy, Jacki, hit maybe Stutzel of Ottawa. And at initial, like the first 10 times I watched it, I thought, oh my God, he's getting suspended for a month. He just shouldered one of the best young stars in the game right in the chin. But what he did is hit him in the hands, and Stutzel's own stick came up and cut him, and he went down in a heap. And it just happened so fast that live and even on a few replays, you think that's a headshot. But it really wasn't. I thought it's kind of the same initially, that maybe the way Zucker, the angle he came up at, hit the guy hit his own. But he didn't even do that. The guy just dove. It was a dive, I thought. So, I don't know. I had no problem with Zucker's behavior on that play. It was a terrible call. But that happens in hockey. So, like, I'm not letting the Sabres off the hook for that. I just wouldn't criticize the player for it myself. But
one thing also from this game, the Kings have a guy who can shoot.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Kopitar.
Yeah, he's 78 years old, but he can still shoot it.
Well, you know, the two goals, the early third and then the winner, both just great shots. I'm watching with my daughter now. I'm not sure if she was in the room for that goal, but my wife and I watch in a different way than we used to, which is like more, it's more technical. And I'm usually learning, you know, when I'm watching, sort of thinking about her coaches over the years and how she's learned and sort of what the technical side of it is. And the way he takes that pass for that one-timer in the slot, Kopitar, and just perfectly places it, like, that's just great.
Yeah.
He's down, his legs are strong, and just sort of gets perfect angle for that shot.
Yeah. That was a pretty lousy play by Dahlin, by the way. I just complimented him and thought that he and Power had a pretty good night, but he got worked on that play by Laferriere. You think I know how to say the kid's name? Owen played with him in Des Moines.
Oh, yeah?
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
That Owen was there. The kid was, he was there. Yeah. First line now for the Kings. I mean, holy cow. I never saw that coming.
Kopitar is great.
Yeah.
Long career.
But Dahlin just, you know, that whole play, you know, you can criticize Joakim Haru for not being on Kopitar, but he's going behind the net to get the pass from Dahlin because Dahlin's got, he's winning the race. He's going to get there, make the play. And the forwards are all circling to go get the pass from Joakim Haru after he gets it from Dahlin. So he gets beat there and like, that's it. There's no safety net. And
just the goalie.
Yep. Tough one.
Football Friday is brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way. This has actually been about hockey, and so will it be for a few minutes longer. Paul Hamilton will join us. His thoughts on last night after the update. Much more football to come. Sal Capaccio, the Dunn Tire Drive at 5. He'll join us for that. We'll have picks as well. Talk more Bills, Jets, and Week 6. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Time for a break. We'll be back in a snap. Brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Ask Paul Hamilton how the Sabres played last night, however. I mean, just, he'll tell you anything. Everything. I hope that's true, because that's actually my plan right now, is to ask Paul how he thought the Sabres did last night. Paul Hamilton on the West Her Hotline. So, this seems like one of those games, Paul, where the Sabres probably deserved better, but... You know, it doesn't feel great saying that, especially at 0-3. How much blame do they deserve?
Well, there are a lot of things to like. I mean, look how they did defensively. I mean, Luukkonen basically saw very few rebounds. I mean, made the first save. The guys were right there to clear the rebounds, and off they went up into the offensive zone. They'd break out and go. I thought they got back. I thought they were on top of the Kings. I thought they killed plays very well. I thought the penalty killing was fantastic, and there were a lot of things to like. They generated chances, they generated shots. What I didn't like is a minute and 9:05 on 3, and they got one scoring chance, and was it right at the end when Dahlin got the puck into the corner, and then found Thompson in front, and that was really the only decent scoring chance they had the whole time. And that obviously can make a difference. You score there, and then Dahlin's mistake in the third period makes it 2-1,
right?
Not tied, you know. And maybe you don't feel so bad about it, you know, if you score on the 5-on-3, but to get only one scoring chance to have a 5-on-3 that long, was the power play better? Yeah, I thought they competed better, but still, it's not anywhere where it needs to be. But there were. you know, they basically played the way Lindy Ruff wants them to play, and they had the better of the play for most of the game because of it. But just like last year, they can't score goals, and they make ordinary goaltenders look like world beaters. And Lindy Ruff said it himself last night in the post game that, you know, if we keep going like that, he goes, we're either going to score goals or we're going to put 82 goaltenders in the All-Star game. And he's not wrong.
Yeah. No.
You know?
Yeah.
Remember last year, every now and then there'd be a goaltender called up from the minors and he looked like Dominic Hasek, you know, and would steal a game for the team. And it's just happening way too much. And then, you know, it makes me wonder, you know, was Tage Thompson's 47 goal year just luck? Oh, honestly, what I think it is teams play him differently now. And he hasn't found a way around that. And it affects him, and he shoots wide way too much. I mean, look at the amount of shot attempts he had last night compared to shots on goal.
Right.
And that happens a lot to him.
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting to say here, Paul, is, like, I can appreciate, you know, being, you know, a card-carrying member of the goalie parent union, you know, a goalie having a good night. But I did not think at all that they got goalied, so to speak, last night, because they let them off the hook so many times. Like, I don't know how many times sitting in my living room with my kid, one of us was yelling, hit the net! Like, talk is wide, Thompson, like, it's just, oh, it's maddening. I mean, so I want to give them credit for being, you know, on point and generating those opportunities. But, man, the name of the game is to put those in the net. You've got your best guys and good opportunities, or even great opportunities, and too often they're just missing.
It's not unreasonable to say they could add easily 5 or 6 goals in that game. And then your two major mistakes aren't that big a deal.
Right.
Because it's 5-2 then, instead of you're behind 2-1. And I'm not talking about being unreasonable here. Easily. I mean, they worked hard at the end of the period for Benson. Now, that's bad luck. I mean, Benson scores. They worked hard to get that goal, and it was as close as it possibly could have been.
Yep.
But it was the right call. No goal. I mean, the clock hit zero a split second before the puck crossed the line. And so not only are you not scoring goals, but you don't have luck on your side either. I mean, it's too bad, you know, you just didn't have a shade more time, and at least you get a goal there. But they put the work in, but that's not good enough. You've got to be able to convert.
He makes a little move to his backhand on that finish. And, I mean, 1.8. Wasn't it 1.8 at the faceoff?
Yeah.
Like, it's asking a lot. He almost did it, but it's asking a lot to deke on a rebound with 1.8. Yeah. So. Yeah.
But that's your natural reaction. You don't have time to think of the clock or anything. When you get the puck like that and you see the opening, your natural reaction is to deke and beat the goaltender.
I can do this, right?
I guess.
You know, it's not, now how much time's left? What should I, you know, that type of thing. Especially a goal scorer, which he's been all his life, you know, is trained to, here's the opening, deke goal. You know, type of a thing. So I don't blame him on that. There's nobody to blame. It was just dumb luck that they ran out of time.
Paul, what do the players sound like at this point after 3 losses?
You know, I don't think they know what to say. I chatted for a while with Jack Quinn today and wrote about it, and he knows. I mean, he was out there 30, 45 minutes after practice working on his game and working on things. He's the last guy off the ice because – in 3 games, Jack Quinn only has 1 shot and no points. Of course, a lot of Sabres don't have any points, but and he knows that can be better. You know, he's working on it, and that's the thing. Jack Quinn has an elite shot, and he gets it off quickly, and he should have more than 1 shot, and he knows it. And I would like to see what we saw in practice today, and it would depend on if Peterka, you know, the Sabres had said that they will evaluate him more after practice, but the good news is he's out there practicing, but he was on a line with Cousins and Quinn. That line has worked very well before, and I'd like to see it because I thought Benson was fine playing with Thompson and Tuck. I didn't have any problem with that. So leave that alone, and maybe Peterka can get those two guys. I mean, Cousins on the other end of that coin leads the Sabres in shots, and he doesn't have any points. You know, so – or any goals. So, you know, maybe Paterka getting on that line, if he is able to play tomorrow, would help that line get going. And I just think Jack Quinn's got to start shooting the puck, because if he does, he is a guy that can score goals.
Yeah, he had one really nice chance in the second period, I think it was. Like a little give and go with Kulik coming in over the blue line. Did he hit the net on that? I'm trying to remember if that's his one shot through three games.
I know he had one block where he was right on the doorstep. Okay. I don't know if that's the one you're
talking this
about.
Was more like they came in over the blue line and maybe like from the faceoff dot around there, I think maybe he got a shot or top of the circle, sort of that
region. And he made that play to Byram in the third period in a 2-on-1 perfect pass. Byram walks in.
There's a post.
Beats the goaltender. Right. Another post.
Yeah.
So many, too many posts.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Too many posts.
Yeah.
The Kings did hit one off the, you know, off the inside of the post too.
They did.
That stayed out, but
actually, if you want to be absolutely correct, Byram hit the crossbar.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was at the joint of the two, but anyway, it doesn't matter. It's all iron. We just call it iron, Paul. That way we're in the clear. Don't have to clarify post or bar, whatever. Byram, he boy, I feel like when he steps in it, it's a mess. Like he when he makes a mistake, I feel like it's really like, oh, dude, what are you doing? But there are certainly things to like about his game. Mm-hmm. But man, I don't want to say like so much hinges on him. I mean, he's their number three defenseman. But if he can play at like close to a level that's commensurate with what his ability is, I feel like that's a guy that's a great thing to have, a third defenseman that's of that caliber.
The double goal, which I think put it away in game two, he made two mistakes.
Right.
He gave it away, and then he got all discombobulated coming back trying to defend and blew that too. So it was like two huge errors that he made there. But, you know, there were other parts of the game I liked with him. And there's been a lot of a part of his game that I've liked playing with power. I've liked the pair, and I watching it for three regular season games, I haven't disliked the pair. So, I think there is a lot, you know, just he just needs to clean up a few things, and I think he'll be just fine.
Overall, Samuelson, I think, has had a rough start to the season. Do you think the late penalty gets him a seat in the press box?
It should. I mean, the accountability has been a big thing they've been talking about, and Lindy did not like that penalty. He talked about it. Something suicide. I don't remember how he determined it. But he did not like that penalty. He goes, the referee was right. He goes, of course you call that. He said, that gets called every time.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you doing? You're killing a penalty, and you come down hard on somebody's stick and break it? Either that or putting it over the glass, you're getting a penalty. Whether you're down a man or whatever, you're getting a penalty.
Right.
And just, it's like, that can't be. You can't let that go by, in my opinion, if you're going to start holding people accountable. You're going to play a heavier team in Florida anyway. It might be an idea to put Gilbert in the lineup for him for a game.
What did you think of the atmosphere opening night?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was great. The fans were ready. They wanted to go off, you know. They you know, were cheering, you know, they were going after the referees, and they were into it. And, you know, when the goal was scored, it was loud in there. And they were – it was like their emotions finally got released when Tuck finally scored, or even when Benson scored, and they thought that was going to be a goal. But – and then – so I thought the crowd was definitely into it, and it was good to see. It was, and, you know, they as far as seeing a good hockey game from your team – they got their money's worth, except they didn't score goals.
Right.
But they got to see their team play pretty well and generate chances and go, oh, about 150 times.
Right.
You know, but, they, you know, so I thought the crowd was great. Unfortunately, they didn't get the result that they came to see.
Forgive me, I could find this in a box score, but was it a pretty full house? Pretty full house?
Yeah, like, it was.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It was hard to tell on TV.
It was sold out.
Excellent. All right. Well, good.
And they were definitely into it. They were ready to go.
Well, maybe they catch a break here with Florida coming in. I mean, maybe they're ornery off a loss, but they lost their captain here for at least some time. It looks like Barkov is going to be out for certainly this game and maybe a week or two.
Week to week, they're calling it. So, you know, we'll see where that goes. But yeah, it's that you get a little bit of a break there. It sounds like Dave Pagnotta said from the fourth period that it's not as bad as maybe first feared by the Panthers, but it's going to be a week-to-week type proposition, so they're going to have to wait and see, you know, when they might be able to get him back. But that's a huge part of their lineup, their best centerman, you might say their best player, depending on how you look at that team. But they certainly have other players that are very, very good. And as you said, they lost in Ottawa 3-1, so they're going to be cranky.
Yeah, Barkov got hurt, if you don't know, chasing down a puck back to his own end with the goalie pulled. And he and I think it was he and Stutzel crashed into the boards together there, and Barkov got the worst of that. What do you think about goaltender tomorrow, Paul? Back to UPL, or do you think you alternate?
Yeah, no, I think back to Luukkonen. It sounds like, you know, rough even from his first press conference. It was like, you know, he's the goalie, you know, and he was fine last night. I mean, he made the initial saves that he had to make. You know, Kopitar is a star player in the league, and you give him a chance to come flying down the slot by himself, he's gonna put that away. I don't blame Luukkonen on that. And the game winner, he couldn't see. Byfield screened him.
Yep.
So he never saw the game winner. So I was fine with him. And, you know, you got a back-to-back coming up after that on the road, which I'm sure Levi gets into, whether it's the first game or the second game, and you go from there. But I don't have the impression that they are in a situation they want to alternate goaltenders. Mm-hmm. But I think Levi's going to get his chances as we go along.
That Kopitar second one might go in anyway. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Both of his shots were so good. Mm-hmm. All right, tough one. We'll see what happens tomorrow night. Thank you, Paul.
Take care, guys.
All right, it's our man Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline, and his appearances here on WGR are brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this.
Sal coming up in 20 minutes, talking Bills Jets. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here, Football Friday. This is WGR. Week 6 in the NFL underway with last night's San Francisco win and cover. Good teams win, great teams cover at Seattle. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. Sal Capaccio joins us at 5. Time now for the Barnes Injury Report, brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Car crash? For help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. It's long. The news of it, really nothing changed today. Literally nobody's designation is different from yesterday, because the Bills just held a walkthrough. I'm not sure it even could have been. But no practice, quote practice, for James Cook. No quote practice for Ed Oliver or Khalil Shakir either. Several players limited: Hollins, Taron Johnson, Austin Johnson, Samuel, and other guys are listed, including Josh Allen, but practiced in full. So, not great.
No. To me, Shakir is the biggest name on that list. I'm pretty optimistic about Taron Johnson at this point. I feel like he's following the same track Terrell Bernard followed a couple of weeks ago, where he came back and was working, still didn't play the Baltimore game, but then was back the next week. Johnson similarly was working out the week of the Houston game, but still didn't make it all the way back, was doing more this week, out of the non-contact eventually. I feel like he's should be on track to come. I'd be surprised. I'll say it that way. I'll be surprised if he doesn't play in the game Monday night against the Jets, Taron Johnson. Shakir is like the one guy I can't see them being without. I just feel like it's really tough, but, you know, they may have to do it for a second week. The way he's even running, I mean, I guess it's good he's doing something, but I don't see someone who's putting any stress at all on that foot. So I think that's a really tough place to be, especially if you're, you know, a shifty slot, run after the catch type receiver, which is what he is.
Sunday, we talked earlier about how it's not the best schedule because several marquee teams are not playing Sunday afternoon. But is Washington-Baltimore the game you like the most?
Yeah, I would say that. Yeah. I'm curious about Houston-New England. Like if I were to, you know, depending on how Washington-Baltimore looks, the Houston-New England game is the one that would get me to the Red Zone channel, I think, during the 1 o'clock window. Because I'd be just kind of curious about Drake May. And honestly, Houston a little. Like, without Nico Collins, I don't know. Like, can they, you know, can they
score?
Can they do it? Yeah. Can they do it? I mean, I think New England's going to be really challenged, but who knows? If May makes a couple of plays, you know, Houston has been playing these close games. They haven't covered yet. You just said it, right? Good teams win, great teams cover.
They did last week.
They did cover against the Bills. It was 2.5, right? Yeah. Okay. So barely, but they got there. So, yeah, I think Washington-Baltimore looks, and I never would have thought that, but I feel like I'm a little in the clear with Washington. There's new ownership there. The quarterback is one of the best stories in the league. Because mostly I've hated the idea of Washington even existing as a football team with Daniel Snyder as their owner. Like, they were just disgusting. And, you know, I trust that they're not anymore. I mean, at least there's new people. We don't know anything that's disgusting about the new people. At least I don't. So, you know, enjoy the ride there. You know, I Jaden Daniels is super fun. I was pretty high on him coming out, and it's awesome that he's kind of taken the league by storm.
If you have, quickly, if you have them done, is that game on your picks list?
I don't believe it is. I wasn't sure what to do with it.
Like Sam earlier said,
right,
he didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah, I need to check, but I'm almost sure that I left it out.
Lamar Jackson against the NFC. Do you know this one?
I don't.
21-1.
Ooh. Yeah, I do not have that game on my
The Ravens' list. Only loss to an NFC team with Lamar Jackson was at the Giants a couple of years ago, and they were up. One of those, it might have been one of those 10-point leads that they lost.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Giants just sort of sucked out at the end of the game and beat them. I remember watching it. That's the 21-1 career against NFC teams. I think there's probably logic to that. Like, if you don't play him, you don't know what to do.
Right.
Like, the Lions went there last year and got destroyed. Seattle went there last year and got destroyed. Those are good teams, especially Detroit,
right.
But they were no match for Baltimore.
And Baltimore destroyed San Francisco last year, too.
On the road. Yeah, takeaways.
Don't see them a lot. Right, yeah.
That's right. Sal Capaccio next. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog Football Friday on WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.